This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Away for another Vaughan boundary.
Well, he's a great fieldsman, Philip Tuffnell. He often falls over and he's brought it into his batting as well.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Vaughney and Tuffers Cricket Club podcast brought to you by The Telegraph. Ben Wright, Michael Vaughan and Phil Tuffnell with you as usual. Well, we said last week that this was one of the most anticipated Ashes series in years and boy has it lived up to expectation. From the very first ball on day one, getting smacked through the covers by Zach Crawley, right to the final frantic moments on Tuesday evening, both sides produced some incredible cricket and have laid down a marker for the rest of the summer. Unfortunately for England, they were the ones to taste defeat. Australia skipper Pat Cummins inspired his side to a two-wicket victory with an incredible knock to get the winning runs. The three of us will unpack the test and look at what England might have done differently. We'll also discuss what they could change ahead of the second test at Lord's next week. I'm delighted to say our guest this week is the former Australia wicketkeeper batsman Adam Gilchrist, who'll be giving us the reaction from Down Under and more. And we'll be checking in with The Telegraph's Nick Holt for the latest news out of both camps. Right, Mike and Phil, how are you feeling? I'm definitely gutted. I've seen England fans on Twitter saying they don't mind losing. I'm not there. I definitely mind. But I think I don't mind quite as much as normal. What about you guys?
Yeah, I mean, an extraordinary test match yet again under this regime of Bazball and Ben Stokes. It was just breathless test cricket every day. Don't mind losing. Well, I think that might change. That might change as this series goes on. It's an Ashes series, isn't it, after all? And that's going to sting that England side. When you're involved in a game like that that goes to the wire and you don't come out on top, you know, they're all saying there, what fantastic test cricket. Yeah. You know, it's all great and all this kind of stuff. But that will sting. Believe me, that will sting. They were always ahead in the game. You felt that they were always in control apart from that last hour. And they just let it slip through the fingers. So it's going to hurt. They're going to go away. They've got a bit of time off now to regroup. But yeah, fantastic cricket. Great test cricket. Great for the spectator. But that's got to hurt. What do you reckon, Mike?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually think it's the biggest cop-out of all time when people say they don't mind losing. Yeah. What a load of nonsense. Absolute, utter garbage. It's the Ashes series and it's about winning. It's about winning. It's about getting that earn in your hands at the end of the five-match series. But the game and the spectacle was spectacular. You know, what England, and it was the way England played that got us to that finale and that drama of the last two sessions, because they played so expansively. They dominated the game.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I would say in a football match, if you looked at the stats of this last week, possession, I reckon England had 68% of the possession of the ball. It just seemed to be that England were pushing. And this contrasting style, I guess the old school attritional way that Australia played worked, because they just hung in there. And when Alex Carey was out to Joe Root, I think we all thought that was it. Done and dusted. The new ball was also due. But this Australian team are the number one team in the world and the Test champion because they have a little bit of substance. They've got skill. They've got a bit of know-how, but they've got a huge amount of substance, and particularly the captain, Pat Cummins. He is an incredible cricketer.
We'll drill into the England performance in a minute, but sort of first up, Usman Khawaja got 141 off 321 balls in the first innings, and then 65 off 197 balls in the second. That's some great batting, but it's almost anti-Baz ball, isn't it? Sort of Baz ball kryptonite. He's scoring at a run every three balls.
Yeah, no, I think the second innings, I know it sounds strange, but I think the way he played in the second innings almost got Australia in trouble in a funny sort of way. He hung about and got them sort of behind the game, so to speak. But, you know, thankfully they rescued it somehow. I mean, I still can't believe it. Mike, in football then, how many shots on goal would have England had?
Oh, they had a lot. They had a lot on goal. The problem is Australia didn't have too many, but everyone that they struck went in.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a few that pinged off the crossbar.
Yeah. I mean, it was incredible. And this England side in a year and a half under Ben and Baz have done exactly what they set out to do. They set out to play a brand of cricket, a style of Test cricket that's never been achieved before. They've done that. They'll continue to play the Baz ball way, the ultra-aggressive, expansive, entertaining way. They say it's not about the result and it's about the process of performance. So people are going to want to watch them more. I will tell them now, they've done that already.
Yeah.
You know, the audiences that were on you know, listening on the radio, on the television this week were record-breaking. Jam-packed crowds. I've never had so many messages from people. Can I get tickets for Lords? Can I get tickets for Old Trafford, Headingley? If they're listening, no, I can't. impossible. But all I will say is they've done that. Everyone wants to watch them now. Now it's about winning. You know, winning the Ashes. You know, this movement that they've created in Test match cricket has been great. But we need to see them win the Ashes. The England fans now want to see them just at times. And I don't want to, you know, kind of put the handbrake on and say, oh, you've got to play this smart way, the attritional way. It's just small parts of the game. And there's just certain elements of it. They weren't cricket sharp this week.
No.
Mm-hmm. You know, the chances in the field, just a few little stats. Australia bowled 4 no balls. England bowled 24 no balls. That is not cricket sharp. The chances in the field, the catches dropped, the stumpings. All right, we're pinpointing a little bit of Johnny Bairstow, but just not cricket sharp. So I would say 85% of England's performance, if they achieve that at Lord's with the sharpness with it, they're going to put Australia under a huge amount of pressure. But I also think Australia will be better next week. Yeah. So I think the tactical side of the Australian mechanism this week was a little bit safe, particularly on that first day, that first ball to see a cover point out on the boundary to Zach Crawley. I kind of went, oh, hello. They've been spooked a bit by Baz ball Australia, and I think they'll be better next week. Warner, Labuschagne and Smith, between them, they only scored 80 runs between them in 6 innings. I can't think that's going to happen again next week either. No. So I think Australia will be a bit better, and I just want England to just be that little bit smarter when they play out in the middle. When you've got an up, Phil, you've been out there. When you play Australia and you get them, you know, you get on top of them and you get the chance to really get their noses and rub it in the dirt, you have to take that opportunity. And England didn't take that opportunity on a couple of occasions.
No, I think it's sort of like Baz ball with a little bit of brain as well. Well, you've got to use your cricket. Now, for a start off, I had a horrible feeling that when we won the toss, we were going to have a bowl on an absolute road.
I was convinced that was going to happen.
And I was just going, don't have a bowl. So we managed to get over that one. First innings runs, the declaration, you know, we could have nicked another 30 or 40. Joe Root was absolutely flying, wasn't he? And Robinson was playing it, you know, playing it so comfortably. And I agree with Mike, when you get an Australia side that was visibly spooked by it, I mean, the fielding positions, you had them by the, what's it called? Do you know what I mean?
Short and curlies.
Short and curlies. Thanks, Mike. And you just gave it back. Similar in the second innings. You know, Joe Root was playing beautifully, then has a sort of a wild dart run down the pitch and get stumped trying to go for the big six.
Mm.
You know, just knock that for two. Let Harry Brook do all that. He is the glue to this side. And we could have easily got more runs there. You know, and we just had we had them. We had them. Yeah. We could have won that game. Oh, man. And I nearly fell off my chair, Mike. I was doing commentary. First ball of the morning, Joe Root comes out against Pat Cummins and plays the reverse sweep. I fell off my chair.
I saw quite a few clips of you falling off your chair. You didn't spend much of the match in your chair.
No. It was the same. Phil, you were the same with the declaration. I'll ask you a question, Phil.
Yeah.
Lords, a week today, England win the toss, the batting.
Yeah.
The 393/8, Joe Root's 118 not out with 30 minutes to go in the day's play. Do you think, because I'm getting a little bit of stick I see on social media, because I say there is no way he would declare again in that situation. And the key is Joe Root 118. If the tail enders are in, I get it. Joe Root 118 not out at Lords, 393/8. Is he going to declare, Phil?
No, he is not. And if he is, I'm going to go round to that dressing room and glue his hands to the table. So he can't clap them in. He can't come out on that balcony. First innings runs in an ashes when you've gotten by the short and curlies, as you say, Mike. You get every run you can. You don't just give it back to the opposition. Listen, they could have got a couple of wickets, a bit like the old school. We used to do that in county cricket, have a little half hour at them. Test matches are just slightly different. When you've got the upper hand, come on. Runs, Mike, runs.
So, Mike, you were not a fan of the declaration.
No, it created great drama. And I love that 20-minute period of Stuart Broad bowling to Warner. The crowd were going nuts. It was spectacular. And I guess, you know, England are trying to achieve these kind of moments. But I would say to them that they are achieving the theatre kind of spectacle by just being them now. So they don't have to over kind of think it and almost do things that are so out of the box that it looks like they're baz-balling all the time. They don't need to do that. They've set the trend of the way Test match cricket should be played in this era with the style of cricketers that most teams around the world have. Everyone wants to watch them. Everyone wants to hear about this England side. So they've almost, you know, I remember in 05, it took three games for everyone really to get interested in the series. You know, it took, well, I guess two Edgbaston, but you know, this England team at the start of the series, everyone wants to watch them. So they've done all the kind of external promoting of themselves brilliantly, and it's been because of the way that they play. But I'll say two of the last three Test matches, they've lost. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've lost. They lost to New Zealand in the second Test match in New Zealand. You know, tactically,
both by very narrow margins.
But they've lost, Ben. It's about the win and the loss. It's high level sport. If it's just purely about, you know, if we're suddenly going to have a league table for teams that lose by just a small margin, well, England and the last three games are top of it. But it's about the win and the loss. And in an Ashes series, you know, I'd love to privately ask Ben Stokes about his emotions of the week, you know, how it was different to, you know, captaining in New Zealand or Pakistan or against New Zealand at home, India last year, South Africa, because it drains the life out of you. Oh. As an Ashes captain, it's just a drain, particularly the first test. It's almost like you want to get to the second test and just breathe, because the first week with all the press, all the hype, all the build up, it can drain the life out of you. So I'd be interested to see what Ben's feeling like. England will make changes. I think they'll have to.
Let's drill into that a little bit, because obviously Moeen Ali was called in, hadn't played. We were talking about the difference between the mental side and how Bazball has worked on that. But you can't forget the physical bit. And that sort of came to the fore with Mo and his index finger, Phil.
No, absolutely. And once that goes, it's a long road back. I don't think we'll see him for a couple of test matches. That's going to need time to heal. He bowled well. He bowled all right. You know what I mean? He bowled some good wicket-taking balls. He could have had four or five in that first inning. But then once that finger goes, mate, you're struggling every time. You can't get that feel on the ball. You can't get that you're called a finger spinner for a reason. If you haven't got any fingers, you're not a finger spinner.
Have you ever had that issue?
Yes, I have, yeah. And it splits. And, I mean, I think that's more of a blister. But, I mean, right. I've had mine where they've split the skin. And every time you go to bowl it, you can't get any feel or touch or loop or dip. You know what I mean? That's how you get your that's how you get your revs and what have you. So, he did a manful job, even being able to bowl, because that is, you know, it is horrible. It's horrible. But I don't think we'll be seeing Mo. So who we call in? I'm not quite sure. I think Ray and Ahmed. Do you think?
Yeah, it could be Ray and it could be Liam Dawson. With Joe Root bowling so nicely as an off-spinner, you know, Will Jacks probably wouldn't be my choice, because I think Joe Root can do the off-spinning role. He did it very, very well yesterday at Edgbaston. I think they need a spinner that can take it away from the right-handers outside edge for a Ray and Ahmed or a Liam Dawson. Liam Dawson would probably be a bit safer. So you think they'll probably go with Rehan Ahmed because they like the risk, this England team. We'll have to wait and see. I think they're going to give Moeen Ali 4 days just to see if that finger. But we know, Phil, that'll just come back as soon as he starts bowling. Yeah. The one thing that stood out for me, and we've all spoken about this England side's lack of game practice. You know, they decided to go on a golf trip to Scotland. I'm all for that. Great culture, have a bit of fun. But I was crying out for them just to play 2 days of the county championship round leading into an Ashes series. I just thought they should have all played Sunday, Monday, get themselves back into cricket, arrive at Edgbaston Tuesday, practice Wednesday, Thursday, and get into the test match on Friday. Because the one player that stood out for me with the ball in hand who was leaps ahead of everyone else, Stuart Broad.
Yeah.
And Stuart Broad has been bowling, he's been playing cricket, he played in obviously the test match against Ireland. And I just felt, you know, Jimmy, Ollie took a little bit of going up. They did a reasonable job in the end. They did a really good job, really, on a placid, docile wicket. You know, to think they created so many chances, you know, we can't be too critical. But I just thought they were just lacking a little bit of that game sharpness for a day or two. And Stuart Broad was head and shoulders above them all in terms of what he delivered. And he's been playing cricket. Yeah.
And he looked exhausted, didn't he? I mean, there were a couple of times he was down on his haunches, you know, breathing hard.
Yeah, no, well for sure. We were all exhausted. The crowd were exhausted. Everyone was absolutely knackered, mate. I tell you, it was 5 days of every ball seemed to have the Ashes urn on it, if you know what I mean. Every wicket, every leave, just everything was just breathless. I mean, it was an extraordinary, scintillating test match. Mike, what are we doing about the wicket keeping situation? Does Ben Foulkes do we win that game if Ben Foulkes is playing?
Well, you've got to look at Johnny's runs in the first innings.
Oh yeah, sure.
Yeah, 78 from 78. Would Ben Foulkes have got 78 off 70? Probably not, but he could easily have still got a 50.
Yeah.
You know, he could easily have got a few runs. He's in good form for Surrey.
Well, John plays, Mike. Johnny's still in the
start. Yeah, John, you're not changing after one game. I mean, England will look at the whole game situation and they should have won the game. You know, they should have won the game and they should have won it even though they dropped so many chances and gave opportunities to the Aussies. But no, they won't change the formation. I don't think they should, but it's certainly going to become more noisy. And this is where Ashes cricket in particular is the hardest series to play in as a player, because over the next, I haven't seen the papers today, but I'm sure the comment pieces over the next few days, there are bound to be journalists that will write that Ben Foulkes should be playing at Lord's. Yeah. Without any question, there will be journalists and people out there thinking that England need their best wicketkeeper. They won't change it, but they'll certainly have to look at it. If they're going to play on flat wickets and the keeper's going to be stood up a lot to spin, and sometimes to seam, and it's going to be quite low. Into you do need a really good glove boom. You really do need someone behind the stumps who's going to be very consistent. Look, Ben Foulkes has played for England and dropped balls before, so you know keepers do. They get the most chances, so they do drop chances and they do make mistakes. It's just the nature of the beast. But we'll just have to wait and see. Lords now, if there was one venue that England would want to go to 1-0 down, to try and boost themselves to get back in the series, I reckon Lords would be at the bottom of the list. That's all I'll say. Because the reason is, this Bazballing team, they thrive off the energy of the crowd, the noise. It's like the football crowd. You know, that's what this team seemed to thrive off. Lords won't be like that. Lords will be very, like, not quiet. It'll be that hum, that buzz. There'll be a bit of singing every now and again, but it'll be nothing like the Holly Stand. And the Aussies have a pretty good record at Lords. They play some decent cricket there. So I think of all the venues that you wouldn't want to be going to try and get back in the series from an England perspective, I think Lords would be probably be that venue.
Talking of the Holly Stand, Phil, what was your favourite chant coming out of the Holly Stand?
It was just kicking off. I started singing along on the commentary as well. I mean, it was rocking from ball one. It does not stop. The atmosphere is great. It really is. I was speaking to Mo, actually, and he said that he's played in IPL games with, you know, four times as many people there. But he said that atmosphere was just electric. You know what I mean? Every single ball. Stuart Broad was whipping them up, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Come on, come on, come on. So they do thrive on it. I mean, it was just a smashing test match. I can see England coming back into it. I think if England had got their noses in front on that test match, it would have been such a boost. And I could have seen the Aussies struggling a little bit. I really could have. But now they've got their noses in the frame.
Yeah.
I can see, as Mike said, they're going to get better. I can see England having opportunities. They'll always have opportunities to win test matches because it's just the way they play. They've just got to take them.
I thought the song, Ben, the song that really amused me all week was when the England fans were singing to the Aussie crowd, "You're not singing anymore." Now, the Aussie crowd, I don't want to be disrespectful, but they're all about 85 years of age. They can't sing.
I think the other one was, what was it? We saw you crying on the telly.
We saw you crying on the telly.
Yeah,
yeah. I quite liked "Where's Your Head At?" Basement Jacks.
To
Travis Head.
T-Head, yeah. He had a bit of fun with them, Travis Head, because he had a stinker of a first day on the boundary. He dropped one. He was fun with them. He was diving over the top of them. He then went to the hotbed of fielding in front of the Holly Stand, and they gave him plenty, but he seemed to know how to deal with it. I think the Aussie, on a serious note, I think the Australians have probably talked about how to kind of get involved with the England crowd.
Yeah.
You know, go and kind of rev them up and give them a few thumbs up and just be nice to them. And you know, we all like a bit of banter and a bit of fun. So I think Australia will have talked about how to deal with the England crowd.
Yeah, remember that, you know, Edgbaston historically, that's where England perform, you know. England usually perform them. So for them to come in their first test match, you know, with the crowd, you know, with everything, Bazball and all this kind of stuff, for them to come away with a victory, they will be absolutely cock-a-hoop.
Yeah, there was a bit of niggle as well. We had Ollie Robinson. You a fan of that?
Absolutely, absolutely. Why not? I mean, this is an Ashes test match, you know what I mean? And you're out there. We were talking about Usman Khawaja. We might be seeing a lot of him as well. I mean, he looked so comfortable, cool, calm, collected, never rushed, seizes on that short ball. They're going to have to find a little plan to make sure they get him out. So when you've been in the dirt and he's on 160-odd and you get him out, well, there you go. It's a little bit of a dance that is, you know, get on with it.
Yeah, I think the first thing to stress is I don't think the Australian players were put back by what Ollie Robinson did. They just kind of take it as part of being in an Ashes series. I think it was just the journalists. It's a story. Probably gathered more traction than it would have done back in the day. Ollie Robinson, I really admire the fact that he's, you know, he's a young bowler in an Ashes series, really. He's not played too many Ashes test matches. He bowled well in Australia last time. And he's trying to... I would think that he's probably taken... what do they call him in Brisbane? Stuart Broad on the front page of that Brisbane Gazette. Remember when they completely... they wouldn't name him after him not walking at Trent Bridge all those years ago. And he's like the villain in Australia, Stuart. But I think Ollie Robinson's taken over his mantle. I mean, Stuart Broad has a huge amount of respect in Australia. He is Mr. Ashes. He's phenomenal. I think that that villain now has gone to Ollie Robertson. So, yeah, he's got a few more Ashes series to play. So whatever happens in this series, when he goes down under next time, I think he might be the target for the Australian crowd.
And I think he's got a few more bumpers to face as well. Yeah. Make sure you get that chest pad on, Ollie boy.
We mentioned Pat Cummings briefly earlier, but what a game. I mean, I saw something on social media where all the England players were asked which Aussie they'd most want in their side. They all said Cummins.
Yeah.
And you can see why. The guy's got ice in his veins.
He's class.
Yeah, he's class. He's class and showed it with the bat. He's only averaging 15 with the bat, Mike, in Test match cricket. I mean, he's a better player than that, and we all said that when he walked in. That will do huge amounts for his sort of confidence, the way that they've come over here and they're going to set their stall out. You know, when the skippers do well, the whole sort of side, you know, sort of get in line and follow behind him. Great with the ball. Bowled a fantastic spell. That ball to get Ollie Pope out. I mean, what?
The ball of the match.
Yeah, ball of the match. Leads from the front with bat and ball. And, one of those fellas that you just want in your team.
Yeah, I was obviously, he gets him over the line. And my mind triggered to, you know, the ball that he bowled to Ben Stokes at Headley in 2019. He bowled that ball, Ben Stokes hit it away. And now he's out there in the middle as the captain of Australia, seeing his team going 1-0 up in an Ashes series. His bowling in the second innings was head and shoulders above. I mean, Stuart Broad pretty close at times, but head and shoulders above everyone else. He's just an incredible cricketer. He's got that real calmness. He's got that real nice persona, but he's got the inner steel of Pat Cummins. And I'll tell you what was a nice touch at the end, and I noticed a lot in the modern era, and it did happen in our time, Phil. You know, the Australians win, they're celebrating. Pat Cummins went into the dressing room, got his pads off. And straight away, he called his father. He lost his mother just a few months ago. And straight away, with his father in the dressing room, just having a bottle of beer together. You know, and that's what the team seem to do more often these days, is get the families involved, because it is the players that obviously get the victory, but it's more about what goes on behind the scenes. And to see all the Aussies with their kids in the dressing room. But that one moment where I just looked up and I saw Pat with his dad and just clinking a bottle. I don't know what the beer was, but they were clinking a bottle together, and I'm sure there's toast in Pat's mum that she couldn't be there. But seeing things like that, I don't know, Phil. Did you ever have any of your family into the dressing room? I can't remember my family ever coming in.
We weren't even allowed wives on tour, Mike. We were banished to Australia for 4 months and not allowed to see anyone ever. No, they thought it would be against team spirit and things like that. It created a few things, but it wasn't cliques, I can assure you. But what about Nathan Lyon?
Well, yeah, you talk about Cummings exercising some ghosts from Headingley 2019. Yeah. Obviously, he was there at the end with Nathan Lyon.
Yeah, exactly. And that just annoyed me a little bit as well. No, it annoyed me the way we played him as well. We had everyone on the boundary. Everyone, the only thing that pitch was doing was spinning a little bit. You know, it was spinning a little bit. And Nathan Lyon, 500 test wickets, absolute, you know, fantastic off spinner, bags of experience. And then, as you said, Joe decides to come down the track and try and hit him for six. Johnny, the only way he could get him out was LBW, and he decides to play the reverse sweep. So just little things like that have given Nathan Lyon that sort of foothold. You know, they had him on toast. They had everyone on the boundary. I've never seen fields like it. You know what I mean? Yeah. And we just kept going and keep just handing back the initiative a little bit when, you know, just knock him for twos and threes, or, you know, when the bad, still be positive, but just don't give him that sniff to get back into the game. And then he comes out with the bat. Well, Mike, I think you said on commentary, he thinks he's Gordon Greenwich, doesn't he, the way he is.
Yeah, he loves the left leg up and the little pull shot. I mean, Stokesy nearly took an incredible catch. But I think Ben, when you're in a game like that as a captain and it's so tight and you end up not winning, Ben last night would have been tossing and turning in his bed about tactics and field settings. Should I have bowled Jimmy Anderson with a second new ball? Should I have gone more orthodox? England took the second new ball. They had one slip.
Yeah.
One slip in the field pretty much spread. There was a third down. There was a ring field on the offside, square leg on the boundary. And he'll be thinking in his head now, would it have been better to go fourth stump line, full of length with a cordon? A ring field to stop the boundaries. But all these kind of ideas and thoughts will be going through the captain's head, because ultimately it is about the W when you get to that stage. It's about the win or the loss. People kept on asking me about, such a similarity between the 05 game at Edgbaston. Yeah. You need that element of fortune. You do, because when he had the field spread, I was thinking, come on, bring a fielder or two up. Don't give Cummins an easy single. Don't give Lyon an easy single. And then I thought, wait a minute, I did that in 05.
Yeah.
I did that. So it's that fine balance. They did get opportunities, that catch. But with our second new ball, the one thing that's still glaring with me today is Jimmy Anderson, our greatest ever.
Yeah, where was he?
Our greatest ever didn't bowl one over with that second new ball, and that has to be a mistake.
So given the result, we couldn't just have a bunch of Englishmen sitting around nattering about it. So I'm glad and delighted to say that we're being joined by the Aussie legend, Adam Gilchrist. Hi, Adam. How are you? And how much did you enjoy that match?
Hello, gentlemen. Look, enjoyed it. Yeah, clearly enjoyed the result. But I think everyone can agree, you put that aside, it was just phenomenal cricket, brilliant cricket, led, I think, by England's attitude and approach. Australia under Pat Cummins, just to me, it looked like they were just holding on as tightly as they possibly could, almost in the jet stream of England for most of that game. And then for the last 10 or 15 overs, all of a sudden, Pat Cummins almost single-handedly just clawed them back into it and got the nose just out in front as they both passed the finish line. So wonderful, wonderful test match. It's going to be a famous test match that goes down in history. And of course, rekindled some extraordinary memories of 2005, which I felt honoured to be a part of that 05 series, even though it didn't end up our way. But, geez, it conjured up some amazing memories.
Gilly, hello, mate.
Hey, buddy.
Hello, mate. Do you think Aussie will feel that they've nicked that one, or do you think that they will feel they deserve to win that one?
Look, I reckon I hear what you're saying, Tuffers, and I would think that internally they probably felt that they were in the game all the way. They were doing what they had to do, almost like a holding pattern against this. And I know that there'd been a lot of quotes and a lot of, tell you what, leading into that test match and into this series, if you were a former cricketer and hadn't been asked for a quote, you must be passed away. How much commentary was there pre-series and pre-test match from all us old washed up blokes? But the Bazball was the topic, and, there's plenty of deniers out there, but it was evident in full display on day one. And I think the Australians, whilst they, continued to say, let's see them do it against our attack. Well, they did do it against our attack. But as I said, the Aussies will feel like they had a holding pattern that allowed them to stay in the game. They didn't get blown out of the contest. And then obviously it was enough to then go and achieve a victory. I think the Aussies internally probably felt they did enough to warrant a victory, but externally it probably looks like it's one that just slipped away from England, and they'll be the ones that are probably smarting at the end of the day.
Gilly, good morning, good evening to you over morning. There. The reaction over here, the kind of the papers of all three or four pages deep in Ashes. Yep. Kind of
excellent.
Headlines, news.
That's good to hear.
Record numbers listening on the radio, watching on the telly. What's the reaction been in Australia just for over the last few days?
Through the series, I think, again, the theme of England's approach, There's been a, there was, I think, a bit of a negative sentiment around what the Australians were doing and how they were going about it to an extent. Actually, now that I really think about their headlines, Ollie Robinson's become public enemy number one. And I don't just, that was before the victory was achieved. So that was just simply after the send off. So, which I do think, and you know what it's like, guys, in the change rooms, the Aussies would have been going, sticking up for their own teammate, you know, looking after Uzi. But they didn't come out publicly and say anything, and they fight fire with fire out on the field. And it was more a press intrigue with that one, wasn't it? It almost felt like the Aussie press were trying to conjure up some sort of action against Ollie or but anyway, that's only they know what they were trying to do. But today, clearly, yeah, maybe an element of surprise, like, wow, what a win, amazing. But there, I think, a touch of surprise that they were able to do it because history was stacked against them, wasn't it, leading into that at the back end of that game. So it's a famous victory. But, wow, you know, momentum now. They've just won a World Test Championship. Yeah. That's a really good feeling. They claw a tight one and get a hold of that. So who knows where it goes now. And traditionally, Lords has been a pretty decent hunting ground for Australian teams and touring teams because it's such a special occasion. So, yeah, we'll have to wait and see.
And they got it done without the batting big guns firing, yeah. Really.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's a good point, Ben. It's not often that both Marnus and Steve Smith fail twice. They weren't sort of getting knocked over for a duck every all four innings, but one on one occasion. But look, it was you're right. It's not often that they don't contribute something, and I guess that's where the Aussies can take comfort. Usman, this is he's come out and said, and I think everyone had the focus on Warner leading into it. Does he play? Does he survive the series? Well, Usman had some demons from previous Ashes tours that he needed to exercise, and I think he's done that well and truly. So, yeah, that's a positive in that if you're playing scrappy cricket or in any sport, if you're not at your best but you're still finding a way to win, you're pretty happy with that.
Yeah, that's a worry.
Yeah, and what about, I mean, we talked to about the discussion about baseball in Australia in the lead up to this series. It's now a little bit different given that the Australians are playing against it. Yeah. What's the sort of general reaction? Because, I mean, as an English supporter, I'm used to the Australians being the alpha dogs and us clinging on in the slipstream and occasionally nicking one. And as you say, that's kind of what Australia's done. So there's a bit of role reversal going on. That can't be hugely comfortable.
Oh, I have no drama with it, really. I really don't. And, it's not the way I personally played my cricket, but I don't say that in a detrimental way. We might find out at the end of this series when Australia release their documentary of the fly on the wall stuff, which all teams do now. They might have the butcher's paper out last week saying, let's just hang on. Let's be negative. Let's, this might be their perfect match plan that they planned and really sat down and put some thought to. So I guess you can't judge it until the end. Well, in this game, you couldn't judge it until the end of the game. What do? Yeah. You say it's 1-0 without being too over the top with it. Well, let's wait and see at the end of the series if they keep it up. And look, things change too, I think. No Archer, no Leach on the eve of the tournament. They're significant personnel losses for that England team. There's no doubt about that. So Australia pretty much at full selection capacity. Maybe, now I'm not saying this necessarily it's my opinion, but maybe the Aussies think we don't want to play that way or we don't have the skills to play. It's a more experienced Australian team compared to the England team, I think, just thinking off the top of my head, certainly the batting. Maybe those players don't want to have to try and change the way they've played where they've become test legends. Maybe they concede that, but they feel like there's a way to still achieve a result, and they did prove that.
And Gilly, match sharpness is so important. Mm. Look at the Aussies beating India, a really good game of cricket leading into the Ashes. England played Ireland, wasn't really much of a contest, then no cricket in between. A lot of England's players have not been playing red ball cricket. particularly behind the stumps, how important was it for you to just get game practice to make sure you were match sharp for a big game?
Yeah, it's a good point, Vaughan. You know, I guess it's each individual, you know, has their own way. I mean, MS Dhoni never trained for wicketkeeping at training. He just didn't. He did no catching. But he's as efficient, particularly over the sticks, to spinners as anyone around, the way he, you know, affects the stumping. But I needed a lot personally, particularly with keeping. That was the least natural part of my cricketing game, but I needed to hit some balls. But from a wicket-keeping point of view, there's only one of you. You know, there's a group of bowlers, there's a group of batters, or everyone has to bat. There's only one wicket-keeper. And I don't want to put the blowtorch on Johnny. It's a risk versus reward selection. And I was the beneficiary of a sort of a period of time where wicketkeepers that batted well and effectively started to get the nod more than your straight out old fashioned wicketkeeper. So I can't complain about that system too much. But you know, if it gets to a critical point where it's being a bit too costly from what you provide with the bat, and that doesn't mean Johnny has to go out of the team. I think he picks himself as a batter. But they might need to down the track. I don't think they need to panic at all, and I suspect they won't. I think McCullum and Stokes have shown that they're not panic merchants, and they're pretty well got a lot of belief in the group that they've got and the plans that they've got. But yeah, Johnny's come off an injury. He'll be better for the run, and you know, in the week between now and then, I bet he'll practice his batting. But I bet he does a lot of sharpening up with his wicket keeping, and he's a talented athlete. So I don't think, yeah, that's a bit of an aberration, I reckon. It's not often that, you know, 3-4 chances go down behind the stumps that, you know, whether they cost a test match, they contribute to the position that England were in. But I don't think you can go blaming that just yet.
Gilly, how do you deal with that mentally as a wicketkeeper when you feel that on you? Do you go away? Do you just go and have a game of golf and a few? But what do you do?
Yeah, tough as in 2005, that was my toughest cricket tour. In 2001, I got some runs in the first test, and then I got a king pair, two golden ducks. This is in India, two golden ducks in one game, and then I got knocked over for 1-1 in the next. But 2005 was worse for me. So that's saying something about how I was going mentally. You know, the game had me by the scruff of the neck. Tactics that Vaughnie and Freddie and co had conjured up. And that started, if my batting felt totally restricted, so then I was putting more pressure on my own wicket keeping to make an impact, and that fell to pieces as well. And I've mentioned this to Vaughnie before at Old Trafford. I remember dropping him. He gets 107, you know, he's single figures, I think. He gets 170 odd at the end of the day. I just had a really tough time of it, and mentally it was horrible. The game had totally was suffocating me. England was suffocating me, and it's they're great memories now thinking back about it, because that's the beauty of this sport and touring and all the challenges. I was getting off team buses feeling like everyone in England was looking at me going, "You're shit, you're hopeless, you know, whatever." But of course, they're just getting on with their night. But in your mind, you think everyone's assessing you and starts thinking that, not only that, and this sounds melodramatic, but that you feel like they're starting to judge you as a person as well. Not only are you a shit cricketer, you're a shit bloke, something like that. So, and it's never that bad. It's never that bad. That's all I tell the current players. But yeah, so it's a tough challenge. And, you know, as soon as you guys remember this, you're out on the field and then you look up on the big screen and you're on the big screen. So you know the commentators are talking about you. So you know the world of cricket that are watching in this conversation about you, and it can spiral out of control. So I hope for Johnny's sake he's able to get away. It's good that it's sort of 7 or 8 days till the next one, and have a couple of days break, freshen up, and then start hitting some balls and sharpen up.
And Gilly, you mentioned that he probably needs to go and do a bit of sharpening up with his wicket keeping. Anything technically that you notice with Johnny that you would just advise him to just encourage him to do a little bit more of?
I'd be doing a lot of work with a tennis ball. I'd be getting someone to hit balls, you know, tennis racket, just so it's soft, slow, just start to get some relaxation in your movement. Ian Healy was the best at this, about teaching, getting your foundation right. And then if you've got a dive, that's you just back that in as natural ability, but get your foundation right. So slower, soft, more supple movements, be it particularly over the stumps. I mean, that's stumping. The one off Kem Green wasn't it, early in the first innings, which would have had Australia about 540. That was, I mean, that's reasonably regulation, but had a good sight on the ball. It spun a little bit, bounced a little bit, but he was just too stiff. So those sort of, you can do a lot of drills with tennis ball, just inner gloves on, not your keeping gloves, and just try to just be really soft. The tennis ball, I say that because if you've got hard hands and you're stiff and rigid, as you know, the tennis ball is just going to bounce straight out. Whereas if you can do a lot of those sort of and get some rhythm up and some feel, I think Johnny would benefit from a lot of drills like that. And he may well be doing those. I don't know.
And what about on the body? I mean, I mentioned the match practice, a wicketkeeper's body. You know, you're bending down, particularly on slow, low wicket like we saw at Edgbaston. It's harder on those kind of decks, isn't it? Because you're having to get down and dirty more often.
And also concentration as well. I mean, that 5 long old days, isn't it?
Yeah, that was a dogfight from the start, wasn't it, really? Even though England was sort of driving the game. So mentally they were probably the slightly more relaxed team for four and a half days of that game. But still, it's, you know, any test match, as you guys know, you get to the last session, day 5, that's been a dogfight. That's been a grind. And it is as tough a physical contest as you can imagine. Even Marnus Labuschagne, who nicked one first ball and didn't get many in the second innings, he still would be physically and mentally exhausted by the end of that game because he's played a lot out mentally sitting there watching the game whilst they were batting. And then he feels a desire to put in more out in the field emotionally, mentally, physically. So, yeah, for Johnny, I mean, he'd been playing a bit of first-class cricket, I think, had he, leading into this for Yorks. But still, you can't match. Doesn't matter where you are. I always say, like, in pre-season, you can run 1,000 miles. You can do all your sit-ups and push-ups. Your first game, even if it's a practice game, remember, boys, how sore you were the next day, how tired you were trying to get through. So, and then you talk about that physicality, then your intensity. It doesn't matter how many county games you play, how many Sheffield Shield games you play. You step up in class in an Ashes test match of one of the most highly anticipated series. It's going to drain you. It does. Mm. It's going to happen. And again, Johnny will be better for the run by way of example. And a number of those players will be on both sides.
Gilly, can I just bring you to this segment of the podcast? It's a very, very special part of the podcast. It's called either or. So you have a judgment to make. Fill the master questionnaire. Yes. We'll give you an option of one or the other, and you can only choose one or the other.
Righto.
Mate, we'll ease you in gently, Gilly.
Okay.
Here we go. Ian Healy or Rod Marsh?
You are driving a stake through my heart here, Tuffers. My childhood hero and mentor in Rod Marsh, and another mentor and a bloke that taught me so much. Jesus. But so purely for cricketing terms, who you're going to pick in your team?
Yeah.
Oh, this does rip my heart out. I'm going Heels. I thought he was, through the prime of his career, he was wicket-keeping perfection for a lot of it. But from an Australian point of view, yeah, I'll go with Heels.
Okay, mate, no worries. Walk or stand your ground?
nowadays with DRS, I'm standing my ground. Absolutely.
Right, okay, World Cup wins, 19, 2003 or 07? Which one stands out for you?
Oh, yeah, all very different tournaments. 99, we were on wood. We We just beat the might of Scotland in the first game, and then we lost to New Zealand and Pakistan. So we're on wood for the rest of the tournament, and we managed to get the job done. Next one, we had some real tussles. We nearly lost the first match, but Roy got 140 against Pakistan. We had some tight games, but we went undefeated. Last one in 07, we smashed everyone. That's a bit self-indulgent, but we did smash everyone. I think that was the most fun. That tournament reminded me of why we play cricket, just for fun with a bunch of mates. And if you get the chocolates, it's good. And we did.
I never got the chocolate. here we go. Glenn McGrath or Brett Lee?
Oh, I love Binger, but Pigeon every time.
Yeah, fantastic bowler. Tequila or gin?
Come on. Don't disrespect me with that second one. Don't even think of it. Mate. You know what it is, and I know those listening won't see this, but it's a bottle of Casamigos tequila sitting right in front of me, funnily enough. So
you've literally got a bottle of tequila right there. What time is it in Australia?
It's tequila time, mate. Anytime.
This is not an either or question, but I was sort of reading about you, and I just had to ask: is it true that the Boston Red Sox approached you towards the end of your career?
Not the end of my career. That's probably why I didn't. If they approached me at the end of my career, I would have said yes. But it was right in the prime of my career, so I wanted to keep pursuing cricket. I wouldn't say they approached. I was afforded an opportunity to go and hit some balls, like I said. Go over there and just there was an Australian guy that was on the coaching staff over there, and he showed them some videos back in 2003, I reckon it was. Showed them some videos of cricket. And the Australian cricket team, and yeah, the blokes sort of were a bit, they're always a bit buzzed out about the fact that cricketers catch without mitts. We all know that, but they were pretty impressed, I suppose, with a couple of slogs that I tucked away in a game that the video highlights that they saw, and asked if I wanted to go over there and whack a few balls around. So, but no, I wasn't. I played one game of baseball when I was in high school, and we got beaten. We were 9-0 down in the third innings, and the mercy rule had to come in because the school bus had to go back to school. So we left. So I knew I wasn't destined for a major league career, put it that way.
Adam, thank you so much for that. That was brilliant. Enjoy the rest of the series, but maybe not too much.
Good on you, mate. Take care, buddy.
We're joined now by the Telegraph's chief cricket correspondent, Nick Holt. Nick, what are the headlines coming out of the camp, and how's the mood?
Well, I think it's a very defiant mood. I think that talking to the players and McCullum last night after the game, they feel they did a lot of the right things and just didn't quite get it right at the end, and obviously need to hold their catches better. There's obviously an injury worry over Moeen Ali. I suspect he's not going to make it for Lords, from what I'm hearing. I don't think there'll be an announcement on that until possibly towards the end of the week. Sounds like Will Jacks is probably favourite to come in. And replace him in the squad, whether he plays or not, it's obviously a different thing. Jimmy Anderson, they say he's fully fit. He was available to bowl, but Ben went with Broad and Robinson instead. And he's going to prepare for the next test by throwing the first pitch at the baseball on Saturday.
Who's throwing the first pitch? Jimmy Anderson.
Jimmy Anderson, yes. So he's at the London Stadium on Saturday. There's baseball there. That's what Jimmy's doing in front of the... So he's got a good arm, hasn't he, Jimmy? He'll be fine.
Yeah. I wish he'd thrown the first ball with the new ball.
It'd be interesting when he rubs it on his trousers, whether that, you know, it's just like, you know, a habit ingrained over the years. But no, they're very defiant. England were going to actually train on Sunday at Lord's originally. They've now pushed it back to Monday. So they were going to have 3 days preparation. They now think they only need two. It's probably just to give them a bit of a rest between games. But yeah, I guess the next big news will be whether Moeen makes it or not. And it doesn't sound promising for him.
Yeah, so that it's the finger, is it? They just don't think it will heal in time.
Yes, and basically, if it does heal, that he'll just rip the skin back off it again as soon as he starts, probably even if he starts netting rather than even before playing. So it probably needs a little bit longer. The Old Trafford test, the Henley test follows soon after. You would think he'd probably be ready for that.
Do they face a lot of questions about the Besto keeping selection?
A few. But again, they are defiant and adamant that he's their man. And the difference actually for Johnny this time is that in the past, the management have not necessarily backed him. Ed Smith was never a massive fan of Johnny Bairstow's when he was a selector. But this time he's got their 100% backing, and certainly of the management, and I'm sure of the players as well. They'll be rallying around him. So I think that again they were defiant on that decision. I can't see folks coming back in. I'm afraid.
Have you had a chat with any of the Aussies? They must be cock-a-hoop.
Yes, I think they were slightly stunned by how the week had gone and vindicated their approach. I think that they feel that they were never really taken out of their comfort zone. That seemed to be the message that they gave last night.
Great, Nick. Thank you so much. Thanks for joining us. And we'll obviously chat again to you next week.
Thank you. Thanks.
Right, that's all for today. A big thanks to Adam Kilchrist for joining us. My thanks to Mike and Phil as always. If you're new to the podcast, Mike, Phil and I will be here every Wednesday throughout the summer. You can check us out wherever you downloaded this podcast. We're also available on YouTube via the Telegraph's YouTube channel. If you're in need of an Ashes fix between now and next week, I encourage you to check out our interview with Justin Langer from last week. The former Australia coach was excellent company, and he opened up in detail about his departure from the role last year. If you have any feedback for us, it's much appreciated. The address is cricketclub@telegraph.co.uk. We're always very keen to hear from you. We'll be back with you next week. So until then, goodbye.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.